I'm Anna.
And I'm Jillian.
And this
is the Hat Picks Podcast.
Just two dope ladies talking about soccer from across the country on the podcast no one asked for.
All right, let's fucking do this.
That's got to go in there. All right. Hi, welcome back. Yes. We missed you.
So much. Blah, blah, blah. Usual podcast opening. Look, we have a lot of shit to talk about today, so we're just going to get right into it.
Yeah.
No small talk necessary.
There's no niceties here. We're just going to get straight into our hat picks, for which I will start. Jump in with us. Okay. So my number three hat pick this week, this couple weeks, I don't know, whatever, this podcast, is Becky Sauerbrunn becoming the captain of the U.S. Women's National Team.
Yes.
Yeah, we love to see it. A little background on the like past few years of U.S. Women's National Team captaincy. In 2016 and 2017, Becky Sauerbrunn was co-captain with Carly Lloyd. Yeah, that's fine. usually Carly Lloyd wore the captain's band in games because she's Carly Lloyd, and that's just kind of how it happened. In the run-up to the 2019 World Cup, the captaincy went to Lloyd, Rapinoe, and sometimes Alex Morgan. But now, Jill Ellis is gone. You have Vlatko Andonovski. And in this new era of the U.S. Women's National Team, he has chosen our beloved Becky Sauerbrunn as our captain.
St. Louis native. What?
I mean, there are so many great things about Becky Sauerbrunn. And honestly, I could probably do an entire episode on how incredible she is in just a whole bunch of ways. But we're talking about the captaincy right now. So,
is that a word? I just want to be.
No, it is. I learned that today in
sweet
reading three different articles about Becky Sauerbrunn being captain.
Look, we're very dedicated to our work, okay, everyone?
Yeah. I read three articles. I'm basically a U.S. Women's National Team researcher now, so please contact me with any questions. Anyway.
If you'd like to pay us to do this work, we're always available.
Yeah, yeah. So this team kind of has a lot of natural leaders, and I think that's part of what makes the team so good. And in a delightful article in The Athletic, which, while I don't agree with paywalls to access information, The Athletic, you do have to pay to get their articles. And I do pay to see their content because they've got some good stuff. And it's about a lot of sports and I care about a lot of sports. Anyway, Meg Linehan and Brooks Peck talk about the array of leaders that are available on this team and then why Becky Sauerbrunn is the best choice. So look into that if you're interested. But obviously there are other veteran players, like I mentioned, with Alex Morgan and Rapinoe and Lloyd, players who could easily take on the role. But I think the quiet leadership of Becky Sauerbrunn will do more for this team than an over-the-top kind of loud person. Mm-hmm. Every player has made it to this point on the senior national team because they're exceptionally driven and competitive. And I don't think they need a fellow teammate pushing them in an in-your-face kind of way to get them to where they need to be. There's a quote from the Athletic article that I mentioned that I really think sums up the kind of one person that Becky Sauerbrunn is, but also the kind of leader that she is for this team. And it's, so quote, "Yes, she's ready to send a text to make sure every player feels supported at camp. But more importantly, she's already bringing that energy to equally appreciating and roasting her teammates on social media." And honestly, I love this for the U.S. Women's National Team. I love this for Becky Sauerbrunn. And I love this for us, the devoted fans.
Yes, this was like, I was so excited when I heard this. This is so great. Again, you got to love a player from St. Louis. It makes you feel well connected. There's a Becky Sauerbrunn mural in the Grove in St. Louis, which is dope as hell. But she is just such an integral player. And I'm just obsessed. I'm so excited.
She has 178 or I guess 9 probably tomorrow, maybe 9 as of Tuesday, 180 tomorrow. It doesn't matter.
A lot.
She has a lot of caps with the U.S. Women's National Team. Oh, and a cap is an appearance for the team, giving you guys definitions.
Yeah. How thoughtful of us.
Honestly, I would not have done that if it weren't for Sherry, our lovely guest from last week's episode. So thanks,
Shout
Sherry.
Shout out.
But yeah, she's a veteran on this team. She's been playing with the national team, the senior national team, for like 13 years. So, I mean, I think it's an excellent choice.
It's super dope. It's amazing. It's great. We're pumped. Jazzed. Insert jazzed sound effect here. Ooh, maybe I can find some actual jazz music to play show how jazzed we are. Wow. Mm. Really working hard to bring you this quality content. Well, thank you, Anna. What a great pick. What an excellent pick.
Thanks.
Go, Becky. Brune. Her many nicknames. Those are so many that I know.
Power braid.
Oh, that power braid could be a captain by itself. Moving right along to my number three hot pick, which is the NWSL College Draft, which happened last Wednesday, January 13th. Very exciting. It was virtual because of the COVID. So, to be expected. since the world is still on fire. Great. Mm. And I copied this nice quote from like Wikipedia or something about how the draft order went. But basically, I'm going to sum it up for you that if you sucked in the Challenge Cup, you went first, except for Louisville, who went first because they're doing expansion. And Orlando was COVIDed up in June and they didn't play in the Challenge Cup. So they were middle of the pack. So there were four total rounds, 40 overall picks, which is wonderful to be bringing this many young women into the professional league here in the United States. I took a look to see what the breakdown was, and the vast majority of these players are American. But for your information, there were two Canadian players, one Mexican player, one English player, one Jamaican player, and one Venezuelan player. But the Jamaican player actually was born in the United States and her grandparents are Jamaican. So she plays for the Jamaican national team, but she was born here.
And the Mexican player is actually not going to be playing here. What? She was drafted by OL Reign and is actually like in talks or has signed a contract in Europe, I think. Not here is the point.
We have transitioned into a new administration here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't want to give too much positivity to it yet.
No.
We're just a day in here. Things are shifting, but we still are in a really bad state COVID-wise and just politically. It may not be the place that a lot of players want to come if they're not already here. So
yeah,
as I was saying, I don't remember where I was. There were lots of wonderful players who got drafted, and I could spend a lot of time talking about each of them if I did the research, but I didn't. So I'm only going to talk about a few of them.
Great.
Because you also don't have the attention span for that. So
wait, me or the listener?
The listener. I know that Anna does. Anna has the patience to research everything but and to listen to it if it's soccer related. But we have, like I said, we got a lot to talk about. There's so much going on in the soccer world right now. So we're going to keep it short and sweet. Yes. Okay. So the number one overall pick, round one, number one. I don't know how to say it any clearer. Number one. Double number one. Emily Fox was selected by Racing Louisville FC. So she has national team experience, was actually called up to this most recent January camp. What? And she played for UNC. So I think she's definitely going to be one to watch, especially with this Louisville squad and the state that it's in. She'll bring a lot to the team. So number two overall pick, round one, was Trinity Rodman for the Washington Spirit. So actually, she is in fact basketball superstar Dennis Rodman's daughter. But she has
Buck
made
wild.
Yes. She has made a statement that she is very interested in making a name for herself and not being just known as Rodman's daughter, like that she is going to be Trinity Rodman. And it seems like she already has a lot of skill. She's played with the youth national team. And as an 18-year-old, she didn't actually play. This is her first year of college, and she didn't actually play because of COVID stuff. But she is the youngest player ever drafted in the NWSL, which is pretty dope and pretty cool. So
yeah, you love to see it.
Love it. Love it. And what a talented family. Wow.
Honestly.
That's super cool. Hope she makes that name for herself. I think she definitely will. And would be really cool to see if she gets a call up in the coming years to the senior national team as well.
Yeah.
So there are others in the first round, but I gotta skip down a couple of numbers to the number six overall pick because it was the Thorns pick. And as Thorns fans, we have to shout that out. Her name is Yasmin Ryan. She played attacking mid for TCU, which I think is Texas Christian University. But the weird thing about that is that I think their mascot is the Horned Frogs.
Correct.
Wow. What a choice.
I almost went to TCU.
Really?
Yeah, listen, I don't want to talk about it.
I can't imagine you in Texas.
Me either.
Anyway, so she does not have national team experience from what I could see on her Wikipedia page or find on the internet. But that, as we have learned from other people who have been called up to the national team, you don't need to necessarily have gone through like the youth programs. You don't have to have gone through all that to be an incredibly talented player. So really, it seems like Portland very much targeted her as their first pick and even moved some stuff around to make sure that they could get her as their first pick. So really excited to see what she brings to the squad. So you can check out, if you just look up NWSL 2021 draft, you can actually watch the entire video on Twitch if you have any desire to do that. It's out there. The NWSL site has the entire list of draftees. So get out there, check it out. There's lots of cool people coming up in the ranks. So that is my number three. I almost said two, but that would be wrong.
Hell yeah. But we are moving on to number two. And my number two hat pick is the Mewi, the Mewtwos.
The Mewies.
The Mewies role in the USA versus Colombia game on January 18th. So we mentioned briefly in the last pod that the U.S. Women's National Team was back in camp preparing for two games against Colombia.
Yes.
And at last, one of them happened. So, little context. Colombia was down, I think, like 9 players due to COVID restrictions and protocols. And they also didn't bring any of their players who are currently playing in Spain, I think is where they are, on club teams. So that's something to keep in mind. But I mean, quite honestly, I don't think we were expecting anything but a U.S. Women's National Team win out of this. I looked up the ranking of Colombia's national team, and they're number 25. And the U.S. Women's National Team is number 1. Irregardless. In that Athletic article, they mentioned Regina George. And so when I was writing my notes, I was like, irregardless, shut your fucking mouth.
Anna's cat has entered the pod. So if you hear any meows.
Just now you know I have a cat. Oh my God.
I'm keeping that.
Anyway, the good gods graced us with all of the Mewis action we could hope for. We've got a Sam Mewis hat trick.
Yay!
And a Christy Mewis goal.
Yay!
So, we're going
to
dive in.
Tell it to us, Anna. Such good stuff.
We're going to go in order of the goals, which go in the order that I talked about them. So it works. So we start in the 4th minute with just an incredibly simple and clean goal. Horan sends the ball to Rapino, kind of towards the left side of the field with plenty of room. Like, Rapino is wide open, and I don't know who would leave her as open as she was. That does not seem smart.
How do you say? Mistake.
Yes. And then Rapino services a simple ball to Sam Mewis at the top of the 18, and Sam Mewis essentially just like passes the ball into the goal. She was just like, I'm here, I'm just gonna one touch it, and it just goes straight into the goal. It was so simple.
Minimal
and
effort.
Yeah, it was just so beautiful. Wonderful. So that's goal numero uno. Then in the 33rd minute, Horan has the ball down the left side of the field. She sends it into the box where Carly Lloyd gets her head on it at the back post and sends it directly in front of the goal, where Sam Mewis folds herself in half and then heads the ball into the goal. She like takes on a full bow and then just like moves her body so that she heads it into the goal.
Note that Sam Mewis has to do that because she's an actual giant.
Yeah, she's the Tower of Power. Yes. She's like 6 feet tall. And so if the ball goes anywhere like under 6 feet, she has to bend in half to get it. So yep. The rest of the... Yes. Did you know I realized that I say yes? Because when you, if you're a native Spanish speaker and then you start to say yes, sometimes it comes out yes. So I took it from my mom.
I didn't know that.
But that's a thing. And I didn't realize it.
Fun facts of the pod.
Turns out that's not a thing that is in any way just me being an idiot. That's an actual thing.
Okay, moving right along.
Anyway, okay, so the rest of the first half is goalless, but the second half, it starts with a bang. In the 47th minute, which for those of you who don't know how the time works in soccer, each half is 45 minutes. So we're only 2 minutes into the second half. Horan gets fouled in the box and the USA is awarded a penalty. Realistically, at this point, who else are you going to give the penalty to? Like, you want Sam Mewis to get the hat trick.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is a way to serve it to her on a silver platter. And if she doesn't make it, then you still have the rest of the half to get it.
Yes.
But Sam Mewis steps up and buries the penalty in the lower left corner. The keeper completely misreads Mewis' body language and dives the other way and leaves the left side of the goal wide open for Mewis, and she just slams it in. It's great. I was a little concerned because she hit it very hard.
Oh, and it was very close. It was like a very
thick. It went straight to the post, and I was like, oh no. But then it went in, and it was fine.
Well done.
Yeah, so now we have one Mewis taken care of. She crushed it. She got her 3 goals. Lovely hat trick. Now we move on to the other Mewis, Christy Mewis. As though you didn't know who the other Mewis was, because we talk about her all the freaking time. Anyway.
I even have a sticker that Anna got me. You can't see it, but I'm showing it to the screen right now. It's got the 2 Mewis sisters on it.
Yeah, so I can see it, even though I bought it.
God, this is helpful. Please continue.
One day we're going to have to visually record this, but until that day, please enjoy this banter. okay, so Christy Mewis. Carly Lloyd has the ball, and she's all the way at the end line. She does like a fancy little step over to get around a defender, and it's at the end line, and she gets rid of the ball almost before it goes completely over the line. It would have gone out. The ball ends up at the top of the 6-yard box, and who is there? Christy freaking Mewis. Of course she is. She one-touch volleys it straight past the keeper for just like an incredible goal. Like, it's one of those goals where it seems so simple, but there's so much technicality. Right. Like, technical training that has to go into it, and it was just really well done. And overall, we love a U.S. Women's National Team win. We love to see the Mewis sisters succeeding. They are goddamn treasures. And as Jillian says, they are just – I added the word gracefully, but they are gracefully aging with time.
I actually, while Anna was just talking, put a strike through gracefully. Aging with time. As we all do. It's my new catchphrase.
Yeah. I think that aging with time and nutso butso are your catchphrases. And mine are boy howdy and I'm sure something else pretentious.
Yes.
Yes.
The list goes on. And I just also like to note that Christy Mewis did not start the game. She was subbed on.
Mm, yeah.
So when she comes on, she scores goals. So
she makes shit happen.
Yeah. It's great. I loved it. It was such a good game. All right. Number 2, Tegan Micah. All right. My number 2 is Tegan Micah, who is the goalkeeper for, I don't even know how to begin to do this in an accent, Melbourne City.
Oh, it's perfect.
Okay. It's really hard. Okay. So this is a game that happened last week, I believe. Melbourne City versus Melbourne Victory, which is another derby. Still a little pissed that they don't say derby, but it's okay because I get to do the accent. So Tegan Micah made several important saves in this derby game, which is particularly important in my opinion, because the last game that they played against Melbourne Victory, she let 6 goals go by. So most improved. Well done. So yeah. She still does get scored on. Melbourne City ends up winning this game 3-2. So she does let a couple of goals go by, but it could have been much worse. And she came up big with several saves. So shouting her out today. One thing that I would like to say I did not appreciate about this game is that fans were throwing water bottles at her at some points during the game, because they're just like people sitting on like a hill on some grass, like behind the goal. And it's like, not cool, Lossies. It's just not. That's some shit. So. And also looked like a bunch of white dudes. So there you go.
And also just like, what a waste of water. Isn't it hot there? Like, just drink it and leave it alone.
Yeah, isn't that summertime?
Recycle.
Bitch ass bitches.
Punk ass hoes.
And one thing that is also cool is that in some of these saves that she made, I would say that they're like, she hits all different kinds of saves. Like, she makes them in a variety of ways. So she's not a one-trick pony. First one that comes up as a Victory player shoots pretty much straight at the goal from the center of the box. Micah totally lays out, again with the hand gestures, again you not being able to see it. She just lays out, goes to ground to smack this one away. It's like very clear that it would have gone in had she not done that. So great job, great save. Not long after that, another Victory player, it could be the same one, I didn't really pay attention. Another player comes face to face with Micah. I mean, they were like super close. She is able to kind of come forward with her shins, like jab her foot forward a little bit with her shin and use that to block the ball away. So another great save. Getting her lower half involved this time. I'm going to burp. I had tofu stir fry for dinner. I have no idea why this is causing so much burping.
The soy? I don't know.
I guess. It was really good though.
Yum, 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 yum.
Anyway. quality stuff. Okay, so finally there is a set piece for victory, and she is able to stop a potential ball by doing the kind of jump and punch ball. Again, punching the air. You cannot see this. All right, so she punches it out of the way, which is always a badass way to save a goal. So it goes over the top of the bar and out. So I think that this shows great versatility, the ability to save like a variety of different types of shots and different attacks that are coming at you. You know, she let some goals go by, but she also did come up big in some spots where it mattered. So I think that needs to be acknowledged. She's also still very young. She is in her early 20s. She has some good experience already under her belt. She played at UCLA. She was a part of the World Cup squad for the Matildas in 2019 and the World Cup in France. She hasn't actually seen any caps with the senior national team yet, though she has had some like youth national team experience. I think she was the third string goalie. There's still a lot of time to be able to get that exposure and get that time on the field for the national team. So
yeah, and I think we're going to see her sooner rather than later with the Matildas, because Lydia Williams, who's typically their starting keeper, is so good, but she's been injured a lot recently. In the past few years, she's been injured more often than she hasn't been. And so if something happens to Mackenzie Arnold, who is their second in line, but I don't know, I think those kind of oscillate, we're going to see more of Tegan Micah, because right now she is their third string, and I don't really think they have another option.
All that being said, you go, Tegan Micah. Well done. Moving right along, Anna, tell us about our honorable mention for this week.
Ah, yes. Our honorable mention has nothing to do with soccer. Okay, let's leave me alone. All right.
How many times can we say it's our podcast and we do what we want?
Exactly. Our honorable mention this week, this podcast, whatever, is the NWHL Butter Bowl. The NWHL is the National Women's Hockey League, and their season starts this weekend. We support all women athletes here on this podcast.
Yes.
And so they are our honorable mention. And I mean, to be quite honest, I'm relatively new to the NWHL. I don't even have a team to root for yet. I'm working on it. I know. I'm doing research. It's exciting for me and literally nobody else.
Wow,
but anyway.
You doing research? This is a shock to the pod.
Leave me alone.
Benter!
So I've definitely watched more men's hockey than women's hockey, but I think that's an unfortunate byproduct of not investing in women's sports. Anyway, I did watch the gold medal match for women's hockey at the last Winter Olympics, and spoiler, the USA won, and it was an incredible game, and so stressful. Oh, it went
I did
into
watch that
penalties.
Game. That was good.
It was so good. I think before that, I knew some about hockey from when I lived in St. Louis, because the Blues are a big deal there, mm-hmm. and so I if there's a hockey game on, I watch it, but I live in Arizona and the Coyotes don't know how to manage their money and therefore their players. So it's rough here. Anyway.
Wait, are Coyotes the name of your team? I thought you were talking about actual Coyotes for a second and you were going to talk about the Heat.
No, Arizona Coyotes is our hockey team.
Oh, I need a minute to compose myself after that. Okay, please. Tell us more about the nubble. I don't know how to say what that is. It's not the wubble. Nubble.
Yes, the nubble. I wanted to include them as our honorable mention because, again, on this pod, we love and support all women athletes. And two, women's hockey in this country is particularly dope, and it does not get enough attention. So I'm going to bring attention to it with this little platform that we have created for ourselves. Okay? So the season starts on the 23rd, which is, at the time of recording, is this coming Saturday, and it's in Lake Placid. But here's the great part about it. All of their games are streaming on Twitch until they get to the semifinals, and then it'll be on NBC Sports. So it's super dope and accessible, and we love to see it. Here's the part that's fun outside of the actual sport of hockey. Other leagues are giving them a lot of support, particularly the WNBA, whom I love. I don't know if you know this about me, but I also love the WNBA. Since having fans in the stand isn't an option because, as we have mentioned before, there's a global pandemic. So no fans, bummer, but opportunity. They have cardboard cutouts of people to put in the stands to show support. And so fans and regular old Joe Schmoes like me can do it, but other hockey teams in the NHL have submitted photos for the cutouts. Some NFL, NBA, MLB players are doing it, particularly for the NWHL teams that have other sports teams in the same city. Mm-hmm. So like there's a Minnesota team. So you've got the Vikings and the Twins and whatever else. But the WNBA is also submitting photos to be these cardboard cutouts. They've really like gone hard because it's not just the teams that have WNBA teams in the same city. It's not like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Great. I hope everybody else can figure it out. Anyway, Seattle Storm will be having cutouts present at every game. Some Las Vegas Aces will have them, Minnesota Lynx. There's going to be WNBA support at every game, which so cool. I love. And I love seeing women's leagues come together. Jillian sent me a thing for the She Believes Cup where the commissioner of the WNBA is going to be talking with the commissioner of the NWSL and a commentator for Fox Sports. So we love when the leagues that have predominantly women playing in them support one another. We love Red Women Who Play Sports, and you should love Red Women Who Play Sports, and I encourage y'all to watch the NWHL season.
Thanks. Hell yes.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Anyway, we have a number one hat pick.
Wow, cool segue.
Yeah, I'm crushing it.
Yes. Okay, so for our number one hat pick this week, we have brought up this lovely lady a few times before.
And by we mean Jillian.
Look, I love this little tiny person so much because she brings so much. She packs a punch in a little tiny body.
She's so small.
Small. But she usually comes in a package deal when we're talking about somebody else. But this week, she's going to get most of the spotlight. Fran Kirby of Chelsea. Just Fran Kirby. You know why it's just Fran Kirby? Because she scored 5 goals in 2 games. That's a lot of goals in not a lot of games.
And most of them came in one game.
Right. It was 4 goals in one game. And then the next game, she scored another goal. Incredible. Well done. These were in 2 consecutive weeks of games. The first week, it was Chelsea versus Reading. The second week versus Manchester United. So I'm going to tell you about some of those goals. And then Anna's going to tell you about some other stuff related. Also, maybe including a goal.
Yeah.
Okay. So on January 11th, we have the Reading game. Let's just dive right in. Jump right in. Because you know what? That's what Fran Kirby did in that game. So about 15 minutes in, Kirby gets a flick header from none other than Sam Kerr. You thought I wasn't going to bring her up anymore, but she definitely plays a role in a few of these. It like almost looks offside when she flicks the ball, but they didn't call it. So tough titties, as Anna would say.
Yeah.
To Reading. And Kirby is wide fucking open. Like,
there's no one around her for like a solid like 15 feet radius all around her.
She gets the ball and ends up, she cuts in, takes it into the center of the field, one-on-one with the keeper, cuts around her, even has to hop over the keeper at some point because she goes to ground, and she slots one in. Goal number one. Check. Dunsies. We're both doing the check mark with our hands. This is fun.
They didn't need to know that.
But I told them anyway. All right. And I also clapped. Wow. This is cool. Oh, I can't wait to edit this. Okay. So number 2 goal in this game. A Reading defender is trying to clear the ball. And who is there? Mm. It's Fran fucking Kirby.
Of course she is.
Right there. So she jabs the foot out, which is actually something coaches a lot of times tell you not to do. But she successfully did it. And gets that rebound of a ball and just goes straight to the goal. She meets the goalie yet again and chips it right past her into the lower right 90. And there you have number 2. We are still in the first half at this point, my friends. The first half. Chelsea has a set piece outside the 18. There's actually a point where some Chelsea folks are like almost offside. So you see people pulling back. The ball goes towards Kerr, who manages to save it from going out of bounds, kicks it back in to save it. And Fran Kirby heads it right in. And right there, we have a first half hat trick for Kirby.
We love to see it.
Yes, we do. With Sam Kerr assisting in 2 of these goals.
Of course.
Kirby is at it once again. I know. So good. And then we have the second half rolling around. And we're like, oh, Fran Kirby, she's done so much. But she's not done yet. And Chelsea has a corner kick. And Kirby is kind of centrally located, but toward the near post, which is on the left side of the pitch for this particular corner kick. And she manages to get ahead on it. But she's like, no, again, she's on the left side. And she's able to perfectly redirect it to the upper right corner of the goal. Like, how? 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 I don't know. And there you have it. So 4 goals in a single game, which I looked up. It is called a haul. a haul, if you will. So this week, our podcast will be called Haul Picks, not Hat Picks.
Brilliant. Love that.
All right. So I know you thought that Fran Kirby was done after that haul. LOLOLOLOL. Oh, soccer humor. But she's not done. Anna, tell us how not done she is.
On the 17th, we've got a tense matchup between the number one Manchester United and number two Chelsea. I'm not going to yell tension the way that it's written in this.
I've written tension in all caps with like 20 exclamation points.
But I will let you know, much tension.
You remember that episode where we were called all caps and body talkers? It fits. It tracks.
Yeah. We are nothing if not consistent. Anyway, Chelsea strikes first, and then Manchester United. Chelsea's first strike was beautiful. Pernilla Harder crushed that, I will say. And then Manchester United answers in the second half. We're tied. Wow, 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 wow. Incredible. We were thinking of adding the Manchester United as one of our hat picks, so I'm just going to do a little brief interlude because this goal was by Lauren James, who is an actual bebe. she's un bebe. She does some great cutting, gets dope give and go ball, and gets it back into the back right 90. Is that the upper? Anyway, she crushes it. It's beautiful. Go watch it. I'll, yeah, go look it up.
She's also 19. She isn't an infant, in case that was unclear. Manchester United puts infant on the field.
That would be the hat pick, honestly.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But shortly after that, Chelsea plays the ball back to goalie Anne-Katrine Berger, German international, who clears up the field. Fran Kirby watches as the ball comes down as she's pacing up the left side of the pitch. And the ball falls centrally in front of some Man U defenders. And Fran Kirby goes into, as Jillian puts it, literal overdrive. She picks up the pace and goes so fast. I rewatched the highlights before this because I needed to like refresh. And as I was doing that, I was reading the notes because I was trying to be efficient with my time. And so I was like, oh yeah, she goes into overdrive. I like vaguely remember. And then I watched it and I was like, holy shit. How do you like go from the pace you were at to that fast so fast?
It looks like somebody pressed fast forward on the video. Like actually, like I encourage you all to go watch the highlights on the FA player because like her little legs are going so fast.
Yeah, maybe I'll put it on our Instagram. I don't
know. Yes,
we'll,
please.
Maybe I'll remember to do that. Anyway, Fran Kirby beats them all to the ball, which, I mean, given how fast she was going, it's kind of no surprise, but also deeply impressive. And she continues sprinting to the right side of the box and chips it into the left side of the net. Like, it just, like, goes over. And just, like, it looked almost like it was, like, an uncomfortable kick for her. Like, it didn't look like that's how she wanted it to go. But then you look at it from, well, I guess from the first angle that you kind of see it all when you're watching it. And then there's a camera, I think like behind the goal somewhere.
Yeah.
And then you see it from what the, basically what the goalie's seeing. And it's just like the most natural thing ever. And it's just so good. Sensational form.
Fran Kirby. Wow. Incredible. You love to see it. End of
love
pick.
To see it. End of pick.
End of pick.
Crushed it.
Definitely crushed it. So I feel like largely we have been pretty positive this pod, which is out of character until now.
Don't worry. We're back.
So in the form of keeping with the theme of our title, our topic this week is actually some things that we would like to call our hat drops, because there is some racist ass shit happening in soccer right now and we would like to address it. So
yeah, we mentioned before, both Jillian and I are both white, and it is our responsibility as white folk to call out racist shit when we see it. You have to name something to know it's a problem and in turn be able to address it. With that said,
one thing that sometimes happens is people appropriate black hair, which can be very harmful if you are not addressing it and acknowledging it and honoring black hair, because there are literally kids who get sent home from school because of their hairstyles, like that then white people wear because they are trendy. And like there have been kids who get their braids cut off by teachers, coaches, like some terrible things happens to black people for wearing their hair in traditional styles. And when white people do it, it becomes a fad, it becomes trendy, it becomes cool, a signature look. And we would like to point out and bring to attention Leah Galton, who plays for Manchester United, incredibly talented player, but she is a white lady who consistently wears her hair in cornrows. Again, very gifted player, but we really need to acknowledge Black hairstyles and what it means to appropriate that. And I think that it would be different if she was like acknowledging and honoring it, but she's not. I literally did a deep dive of her Instagram today. She is either engaged or married to a Black woman who sometimes does her hair, but in no way ever acknowledges the roots of that. It's problematic, to say the least.
Yeah.
Look, Anna and I have both played soccer. We are also humans and know that sometimes it is annoying to have your hair in your face, probably especially while you are playing a sport. However, there are ways to do that that aren't appropriating another person's or a group's culture. And if you are doing it, there are also ways to bring it up and to honor it and to not just do it in a way that benefits you. She even said like, oh, one time I was in Budapest and a guy recognized me even though I didn't have my braids in and I was in normal clothes. Like, this has become a signature look for her and there's like zero acknowledgement that this is a Black hairstyle. So just because there are so many Black people who have been harmed and criticized and ridiculed because of this very hairstyle, but it's cool when a white person does it, it's a problem. So want to call that out. We see it. We're calling it out. It's not great.
Not great. And to keep on the not great train, we mentioned the NWSL draft, and one of the Chicago Red Stars draftees, Channing Foster, had tweeted some racist and hateful things, which have since been deleted, but it hasn't been addressed by the Chicago Red Stars or Foster without any urging. The local fan group for the Chicago Red Stars, the Chicago Local 131134, discovered some tweets, which, as I mentioned, have been deleted, but they said they were, quote, unequivocally racist and hateful. And deleting racist tweets or posts does not mean that you are absolved of having done the hateful thing. It's not cancel culture to hold someone accountable for doing that and why they even felt that was appropriate in the first place. Nothing has been done by the Chicago Red Stars, which is a problem. And by letting this go, it's tacit complicity in saying that what she did was okay and that her deleting things makes it a problem that we no longer have to deal with.
Right.
But because she is a white woman, she has the power and the space to say those things. And there are repercussions for that. And that needs to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be discussed, particularly in regards to her future contract with the team. I mean, how can you not address something when you are going to be particularly a public-facing figure? It's not okay as just like a regular old person, but now that you are going to be a face on a public team, it's like extra not okay. I mean, we all probably have said some things that we shouldn't, but own it and apologize for it, address it instead of ignoring it, and learn from it, work towards not being a shitty racist person. And especially because Sarah Gordon, who is on the Chicago Red Stars, has been very vocal recently mm-hmm. about not taking any more white people shit.
Right.
And she shouldn't. And I think that this might be a problem for them.
And, you know, I was reading the thread where the Chicago Local 134 brings this up. And, you know, of course, there's some like nonsense about people being like, oh, I'm unfollowing this now. But somebody else saying like, you know, I don't want to be like held accountable for the things that I said in high school. And it's like, okay, I understand that to an extent. However, it's not even that they're deleted. It's that you think that that absolves you because like, yes, like I have made mistakes. I have grown in like my understanding of racism and white supremacy and what that means as an adult. And I can acknowledge and own that I did some things I shouldn't have when I was younger or said some things I shouldn't have. Own it. Apologize. Don't just like try to smooth over it without saying anything. That's where it becomes problematic because it's like ignoring it doesn't solve the problem.
Right.
That's not great. It's not super cool that that's happening. So
it bad.
Probably the toughest one for us, I would say, because we are such big U.S. Women's National Team fans. We love these players. They are icons. Look up to them. They're such public figures. And something that we are finding pretty problematic is that some of the players on the U.S. Women's National Team are still not kneeling while their Black teammates kneel and they wear Black Lives Matter across their warmups, which feels like some cognitive dissonance.
So I think that a part of the problem for some of the players, besides the general cognitive dissonance, is kneeling in no way says, fuck my dad who's in the military, Kelly O'Hara. Like, that's not what you're saying. And kneeling in no way says, like, fuck Jesus, Julie Ertz, especially because you've knelt before. So why not use this public display to show that you empathize and stand with your Black teammates and stop trying to coddle your own whiteness?
Right. And it also, we read this very poignant article, which we'll talk a little bit more about later, but like Carly Lloyd was just saying, like when asked about it, Carly Lloyd said that she's been like in the woods and has been under a rock while healing from her injury. And it's just like, wow, that is like not, it's like not a reason.
That's the epitome of white privilege.
Absolutely. For those listening, like Anne and I are completely imperfect people and constantly have to work on stuff ourselves. We are working on calling things out when we see them, understanding that we also constantly have our own work to do. So just kind of putting that out there, that we're not like sitting here pointing fingers, like we have to point the finger at ourselves all the time. All of this is happening on the same. So this game that the U.S. Women's National Team played against Colombia on Monday was also on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And that same day, the Black Women's Player Collective put out, I would say, a hell of a statement. And I'm going to read it for you now. The horrifying assault on the Capitol by a violent mob has exposed a truth so many have fought to deny. Black and white lives are not treated the same in America. Further underscoring the need for all of us to face the truth about our country and bear the responsibility of dismantling white supremacy. The U.S. Women's National Team players have the distinct honor of representing our country on and off the field. And stand up to injustice and stand in defense of Black and brown lives. Our expectation is that our incredible fans, the media, and sponsors alike share that responsibility with us. As Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. famously said, the time is always right to do what is right.
And I very much appreciate the statement they put out. I think it's important that all athletes use the platform that they have. However, it is absolutely not appropriate to put the bulk of the responsibility on the Black players for them to address white supremacy and the racism they experience as a result of that. The white players on these teams need to understand that when they do not kneel beside their Black and brown teammates who are doing the work to bring these injustices to everyone's attention, again, the work that they don't need to be doing, it's one, a dismissal of the work that those Black and brown players are doing, and two, it completely ignores the fact that they need to be doing the work too.
It is also very much the bare fucking minimum, which is brought up in this article that it's, I think it's called All for 11 by SB Nation, and the author Andre Carlisle, I really recommend that you read this article, brings up the point that kneeling isn't a solution in and of itself doesn't solidify it as an excuse. Meaning that just because kneeling doesn't solve anything doesn't mean that, like, you shouldn't kneel. Like, people lost their jobs and lost funding and lost sponsors over kneeling to speak out against the brutality that was happening by police against Black and brown lives. And now that it is okay, it really is the bare minimum that you can do to show that you stand in solidarity. Like he brings up in this article, you know, I see this happening, but like, I still need to stand for this song. What? I mean, it is so the bare minimum that you could do. And it's just shocking to us that honestly, we weren't that surprised by Carly Lloyd, to be quite honest. But like, I was kind of surprised that Lindsey Horan didn't. And Kelly O'Hara has made many statements about this. And Julie Ertz, we mentioned last week in the podcast, it's just, I just don't understand why you wouldn't do that for your teammates and read the article. But I think the bigger question that we have to ask ourselves as fans, especially with a call to action from like these Black players that are so incredible, not only on, but off the field, what does it look like for us to be soccer fans and to also dismantle white supremacy and to call this shit out when we see it, especially for those of us who are white? Our privilege for so long has allowed us to watch and enjoy the sport with little to no acknowledgement of the plight of so many of the players that we love. It's like, quite frankly, time for us to cut that shit out. And like, I include myself in that category, like have very much enjoyed being a fan of this team and this sport for so long without that these worlds are connected and that it's all interconnected and we have to do the work. We need to fight alongside and for these players that we love.
I remember we were texting during the game and I kind of went off on cognitive dissonance and how you can wear Black Lives Matter on your chest and not understand that that's one, not enough because your entire team's wearing them. They don't give you another warm-up to wear. That's right. What you wear. So it's not really a statement so much as you wear the thing that your team has given you. Two, it is, like Jillian said, the bare fucking minimum, but how you can wear Black Lives Matter on your chest and not understand by not kneeling and doing this visual display of solidarity when your Black and brown teammates are literally right next to you. I don't understand how, well, I understand because it's white privilege and it's like white apathy and all these other things, but how you can do that and then turn to them and do your cheer before the game and feel okay about yourself.
It's so strange. And like one of the things that Carlisle mentions in this is like, I think in one of Kelly O'Hara's statements saying that they have talked about it as a team and like that they've just said that you need to like do whatever you feel like you need to do at that time. And just Carlisle bringing up that like that they're using that as a shield to not do the work in many ways. And I just think that this is hard. Like it is hard to take something that has so largely just been like fun and something to enjoy and to suddenly have it be politicized in a way, but like it's being politicized for the right reasons because like this is stuff that needs to be addressed and it needs to be. And I think that we as fans, especially white fans, have a duty to be a part of that work if we're going to continue to enjoy the sport and participate as fans. I hope that you will join Anna and me in this really, really hard work that we're constantly doing and constantly fucking up, but like it's important.
And I think to the point of intersectionality, like when these players step on the field, they don't lose their race. Like they're not just like just things for us to watch. It's they're still Black and brown people who experience racist effects of white supremacy. We have to acknowledge their whole self.
Yeah.
And we can't separate their race from who they are as a player on the field. It's all intertwined and we have to acknowledge all of it.
Yeah. And even if you don't give a shit about us and like don't care that we like want to do this work, like they literally put out a statement calling people to action. Our expectation is that our incredible fans, the media and sponsors alike share that responsibility to dismantle white supremacy with them. Let's fucking do it.
So do that thing.
It's very hard, but we can do the work. We can do hard things.
We can do hard things. Thanks, Glennon Doyle.
Yeah.
we will put the link to this article when this pod goes up. I will post the link to the article on our Twitter, which will be the easiest way for you to click it and access it. But I will also see if SB Nation has it on their Instagram so I can just link the photo. But it's a very good article. And Andre Carlisle writes a lot about the intersection of race and athletes, and so you should also follow him on Instagram. I don't know if he's on Instagram, but he's on Twitter at Not Carlisle, because I went down a rabbit hole of his tweets today and they were incredible.
It's hard not to go down social media rabbit holes when we're doing research for this. I probably sent Anna like 6 Instagram posts in a row while researching stuff earlier, so we invite you also to go down rabbit holes.
Yes, you can go down a rabbit hole on our Instagram at HatPicksPod.
Wow.
Yes, crushed it. Or on our Twitter at HatPicksPod. Or you can, you know, send us an email at HatPicksPod@gmail.com. Or you can go to our website, HatPicksPod.com.
Wow.
Because we have one of those and I forget about it every day.
Look, I'm going to be honest. No one has emailed us. Only Jillian. Twitter. Only Twitter emails.
Don't make us sound like losers. God.
We're so cool.
Yeah.
Look, if you're intimidated or if you just know us personally and speak to us in other avenues so you don't feel the need to email us.
Yeah. We also get that. But also, you could email us just because
you feel bad for us.
That's fine too. That's fine too. I mean, do whatever you want to do. I mean, whatever. Except follow us on Instagram and Twitter. You should do those things. Thanks.
Yes. And you can also, you know, the website is cool too. Anna does a good job with that. We kind of separate duties a little bit. So I kind of edit the stuff and she does the other stuff. So I don't really touch the website, but she does a great job.
Yeah. Actually, I don't really touch the website either. I have set it up so that our podcast automatically uploads to it because I crushed it.
What a gift. All right. Cool.
We really need to end this.
Maybe on that note, I'm Jillian.
And I'm Anna.
And this has been
the HatPicks Podcast.